Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week's This Life with Dr. Bob Forrest is courtesy of Bergamot Sport, an all-natural athletic performance-enhancing and muscle recovery supplement with the usual multiple cardiovascular benefits associated with the polyphenols in the Bergamot products. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the laptop or the iPad or the iPhone and get ready for another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
And to be fair, I think you heard my voice popping in just before you gave our usual intro.
Yeah.
And it's because Stephen Adler and I were chatting it up, and I said, what I was trying to say was, remember when Stephen's mom complained about Steve being too chatty? Well, we're going to have Stephen Adler in here in just a second.
Yeah,
he'll have plenty of chance to talk it up, so that will be in just a minute. I want to remind, we're also going to have our friend Tom Bilyeu. Is that how you spell it?
Bilyeu, yeah.
Bilyeu. He is, I'm going to have you describe yourself, but he is Quest Nutrition, essentially, a Fortune 500 company. Before I mention that, I want to remind people again about Bergamot, Bergamot Plus, Bergamot Sport, and we have a new sponsor, Hydrolite, which is something I'm very excited about, something that I used personally and then sought them out because I thought it was such a great product. So there you go. Tom Bilyeu is co-founder in 2014 of 2014 Inc. What's the meaning of the 2014 Inc.?
So we were named one of the 500 fastest growing companies. We actually came in second. Wow. Horrified that we didn't get first, but that's good. It left a chip on my shoulder to do a little better next time.
It speaks volumes about Tom.
That's the Steph Curry chip.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom is a speaker, is an entrepreneur, he's a change maker. He obviously, I think most people know your nutrition bars now, the Quest Nutrition Bars.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like they really are all over the place. We're in like 91 countries.
It's crazy.
It's like 70,000 points of distribution. I mean, it's nuts.
How did you do it?
It really was making a great product. So let's start with that. So it was the first bar that tasted like it had sugar, but didn't. And then understanding social media before other people did. So we built the company purely on social. It was all about building community, celebrating transformation, doing what we called mirror marketing, where we were showing the customer themselves and celebrating what they were accomplishing.
Well, interesting that you would use the the mirror analogy, because that's something Stephen Adler wanted to talk to us about. We're sort of talking about motivation today, generally. Stephen, are you there?
Of course.
Hey, buddy.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're great. Good to hear you again. Good to hear the enthusiasm in your voice and the health. I read the Four Agreements and the mirror analogy.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and the mirror analogy came up prominently there in terms of showing other people and yourself in the mirror, right?
Yes, of course. And it's not just for addicts. It's
no.
For everybody.
Yeah. And
you know, to change their lives.
It really helped Stephen a lot.
I know.
And I read it. It's a you know, all these philosophies overlap. They're all very, very
similar.
Well,
some, I just have a dividing line. There's some that are like abundance oriented. You're going to get all that you want.
Right.
Right. I just discount
those.
That's
like the secret.
But the thing,
everything's coming your way
just
by thinking
just because you're American. You know what I mean? But then there's the repeated.
It's about becoming the person you were.
Yeah, but understand.
You got, you know, screwed up and got beaten up by life and what life has. And the streets can offer is to bring you back to that wonderful, sweet child that was carefree and outgoing.
That's
you
called
know,
Drew
I
and
drugs,
I.
But, I didn't go but, anywhere except for to the dealers.
We Drew and I call
I
it
go places.
Stephen, Drew and I call it entering the frame, letting somebody know you. It's also known as a therapeutic relationship between therapist and client. It's also teacher and guru.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah,
so
that's
it exists in all. Everybody's just got to find which version they like. That's what I've always thought.
Closeness, with their version of human closeness.
The thing I like about the four agreements is, and you read it, Doctor, if I'm wrong and mistaken, tell me, was it not so easy to read and understand?
Yes, yes. And that's what, as I was reading.
And you get, when you go into a rehab and you're detoxing and your mind is not reasonable whatsoever. You basically got, however long you were doing drugs, you were in the ring with Mike Tyson, and he's just punching you in the head. So your brain isn't ready. You go into a rehab, what's the first thing they do? They give you a mild sedative, and then they give you this giant big blue book, and then they give you a pad of paper and a pen, and they want you to start writing your life down. And the last thing you want to do when you're in that state of mind, unreasonable state of mind,
clarity,
is fucking read a giant book that's so difficult to read or do any writing. My idea to help people, because I want to help people, because I know the pain and suffering that we can do to ourselves.
Yep.
Wow.
And what
this is Stephen
idea,
Adler
know,
on the
I
phone?
I know it's
a 180. A 180 retreat. The thing is, when you say the word rehab, that's a bad word now. You say, I'm going into rehab. People think, oh, he's fucked up. He's got problems. He's done. And then you go into the rehab, and like I said, they give you these books. They give you no sedative or anything for it to relieve the pain that you go through. And Bob, if I'm not mistaken, you tell me if I'm wrong, when you're detoxing, you could feel the inside of your bones ache.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
That's what it feels like.
We had an old client, Pat, said his eyelashes hurt. That was
rough.
My favorite line about opiate withdrawal.
My
eyelashes hurt.
That's rough.
So let's talk about the health and wellness. Well, hold on, though, Stephen, because your thing is in the philosophical, spiritual health and wellness thing. And what I'm finding is, where you come from, all those people are seeking the same thing.
You're pointing at Tom.
Self-honesty, right? The health and wellness.
Everybody
kind of space.
That is, everything that I was doing to myself and living my life, I needed to start doing the opposite. Because what I was doing obviously was not working. And it is not easy to change because your mind is so, brainwashed on how you've been feeling for all these years.
Your mind is in a
default setting. And the only way to change is you have to make an effort, but first you have to heal the mind.
And the mind
needs to heal. It takes time to heal.
Hold on, Stephen.
Well, I was just going to say it's really interesting to hear. I mean, this is the realm that I live in as an entrepreneur, right? So how many skills can I acquire, develop my mind, use neuroplasticity to get better, to improve? It's really fascinating to hear that this is the exact same struggle no matter where you're at on the spectrum.
It really is.
That you're going through the same thing.
Yeah.
The excitement that I can hear in Stephen's voice over the ability to change and understanding that it all starts with the mind. And that was why, so when we founded Quest, I always knew that there was a second part to the equation of wellness. So Quest addresses the body, but the new company that I'm doing, which is called Impact Theory, it's all about the mind.
Tell us about that.
So
maybe
Impact
Stephen,
Theory,
maybe you're 180 and Impact Theory can get together here. Hold on.
Impact Theory was me looking at the flip side of the wellness coin and saying, okay, what's the no BS truth of how you really impact mindset, what I'll call generational poverty? So I've worked in the inner cities a lot, and I know what poverty looks like from a financial standpoint, but that's not really what I mean when I say generational poverty. I'm talking about the mindset that's handed down when people have never been able to transcend their circumstance, because you could have a monk who knows exactly what he's doing. He has no interest in worldly possessions and money that doesn't mean anything, but he's not lost. But you get people that get trapped in the inner cities because the mindset that they're given is one of you can't do whatever you set your mind to, right? And you listen to Stephen talk and he realizes, okay, wait a second, doesn't matter where I've been, only matters where I'm going and the price I'm willing to pay to get there. And so now he's rebuilding his life starting with his mind. So
you are, as a person, a single each individual is who they grew up with. If you grew up with good parents, then you're usually going to be a good person. If you grew up with parents who would gossip and talk bad and be impeccable with their word with you,
oh, that sounds like a little. You're going against the four agreements.
And then when you have children, you're going to treat those children the same. That's all you know. Definitely so is. You go to these poverty places, they're told and they're seeing their whole lives, well, you're never going to amount to nothing. You know, you're going to have to sell drugs. Or, you know, they're hanging around with the wrong people. If I hang around drug addicts and losers, I'm going to be a drug addict and loser.
So
if I hang.
But hold on one second.
Life,
people do get out.
Winner.
But people do get out. You got out. I always think of Will I Am and people that got out of the inner city, and I ask them how.
Mm.
Art, thought, thinking. Dr. Dre, and music in Compton. In Compton.
Wait. So Stephen just said he'd had enough.
Yeah, I know. But so those people get out, but they still go through the disillusionment. How do I find self? How do I find value?
Yeah. So the inner cities to me are.
Well, That's where the four agreements come in. Any person who can read a Sesame Street book can read the four agreements and understand.
I never thought
I would say this, that if something, you know, bothers me in my mind, I have the tools now to go to this book and just read, open at any page, and it's going to remind me, oh, wait, no, that's just, you're thinking, you know, that's impeccable thinking. You know that's not true. And it brings me back to who I really am again. I'm closer to being that young kid who would run in the house naked, jump around singing, and be happy and not be embarrassed or ashamed. And it's a great feeling. See, granted, I don't run around the house naked and singing, but I have
too
that
bad,
feeling.
That's too bad.
Like you used to. I think
everybody's seeking the same thing.
Of course.
And the question is, why in America so much? That's what I'm more
because
right
we have. We're part of it is we're not spending our time trying to survive. You know, so we have the time to
we have the luxury to worry about
stuff. Yeah, but he's onto something here.
Well, also you got TV, you got movies, you got these ads in America that are saying this is how you should be, and then these people look in the mirror and they're far from what their people, the government or the ad people are saying you should be. And they're going, well, I'm just a loser on this and that. But no, but everybody's beautiful in their own way. And everybody has a fault in their own way. And we can all, I have a friend of mine, a singer friend, whose both his parents were heroin addicts and, cocaine addicts and everything. He has never done a drink or a drug in his life. Because when he was growing up, he said, I don't want to be like this. But that's a one in a million case.
Right.
If you grow up around people that are abusive, verbally or physically, or doing things that are you know, just downright, you know, not cool or nasty or dirty. Drugs are nasty and dirty. Alcohol is nasty and dirty. You're gonna be that person.
Well, let's talk about
you are who you hang out with.
I do. I want to get into
and
it. But
growing
and
up, your
there's
mind
a podcast
is so
with
young
this too, right?
And takes in so much info.
But
you know?
what Steve is talking about is something that is really not. He's talking about sort of a cognitive behavioral therapy is what he was talking about. And what really we don't have sort of manuals that are personally adjustable. You know what I mean? We have the Big Book, or we have, in Steve's case, he has the Four Agreements, or we have
the
Bhagavad Gita, we have the Bible.
Somebody's supposed to teach you and help you understand it.
But that's right, but not everyone has access to that. And so, yes, CBT done properly is with a therapist and an empathic attunement that's applied for a perfect, you know, for that person. And guess what? It works. But the average person can't do that. I'm beginning to wonder if there is manuals we could create that sort of are, you can personalize them. You know, much the way this.
Well, I think the Four Agreements is it's for each individual. It goes for everybody. Like the Big Book, the first ever read in my life. I got a Hardy Boys mystery when I was like 12, and I never finished it. But the Big Book I read, and it was in a way, but it was boring as fuck, and it was so long. The stories I understand.
You're breaking up a little bit, Stephen. Hang on. You're breaking up. Can we maybe reconnect with Stephen?
Yeah, I'm going to call him back.
Okay.
Hold on.
Meantime,
call
we're talking
back
to Tom. So,
because I'm interested in your space, I think the world where you live.
Yeah.
I
first tell us where's
the
pod and where do we find it?
So Impact Theory, you can find the easiest ways to go to iTunes and Stitcher, Impact Theory, right there. You can also go to YouTube. It's actually a video podcast, and we're really excited. At the end of this interview, Dr. Drew is going to agree to be on that show. It's going to be amazing.
Okay,
right. I'm totally twisting his arm here.
That's fine. I saw you on the other one on what's his name? The other empowerment one. Guy used to be a football player, I think. What's his name? I saw you just on it.
Oh, the Impact Sports thing?
No. Which one?
No.
Oh, Michael Strahan was on my podcast.
No, it wasn't Michael Strahan. It was, oh, God damn it. You were on, no, you were on his.
I've had the great fortune of going on a lot of great podcasts.
Just so you know, what I've been dealing with the last 10 years, really, is Silicon Valley are the new rock stars. There are no rock stars anymore. Music is over. And I deal with more clients from up there that really believe after they made their 40 mil or whatever, their idea got bought by somebody, that their life is over because they've been in their bedroom writing software, trying to figure stuff out. And by the time they're 28, they're kind of obsolete. Are they going to go?
Here's what I found.
They end up on drugs just like every other rock star.
But
it's
what's
weird.
Interesting. What I have found is that they do their thing. They have their road to liquidity, whatever it is, and they go, they look around and they go, now what?
Yeah.
Now I want to do something. And I've had them approach me many times, and I go, well, first of all, I get jealous. I go, you asshole. And then I go, then I think to myself, I thought, man, I got that piece pretty wired, so I can always make a difference. And I thought, well, what is that? I started thinking a lot about that. And Aristotle had a whole thing about this, and he said you needed to have a certain amount of phenomena in your toolkit, as you said, in order to meaningfully flourish and make a difference. You need to have a certain amount of wisdom. He called that phronesis, and that through experience. Secondly, you needed skill. He called that techne, and then obviously the desire and the structure and the discipline.
Motivation.
But they don't have a set of skills and wisdom that really make a difference for people. If they really want to do it, they should go back into training and train in some sort of skill set.
You just gave me the chills, and I hope people are listening to you, because that's the missing piece, right? So to Stephen's point, or to your point about what Stephen was saying, the world is going to change, and the individualized book is social media, right? So now the next wave of social media, I think, is going to be people that realize they have the skill set, they've already put in the time, they've been an entrepreneur, they've been a doctor, they've been whatever for 15, 20, 30 years, and now they're coming to the table with the ability to reach a global audience. Yeah. And now that global audience is going to self-select. So there are people that follow me socially because of what I represent and the way that I approach the world. There's people that follow you, or they follow Gary Vaynerchuk, or whatever flavor it is that resonates with them. And as more and more people begin to realize that it's not about having the biggest audience in the world, it's about having a really targeted audience for whom you are the personalized manual. So I think that's going to get really interesting.
Ooh,
but
that's interesting.
What you were saying about people really having to get the skills, like social media is now becoming a distraction. And people think, my goal is to get famous, right? Which is, it's an innate human driver. And it's an innate human driver.
The most famous girl from the thing before Facebook just died today, you know.
From MySpace?
Yeah. The MySpace girl died today.
The drugs or?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Wow.
A liver failure.
Okay, we got to take a little break. We're going to bring Stephen back. We're going to keep this conversation going. I just got to take a quick break. Be right back. Now, a couple of months ago, I was in my medical office, and I noticed some samples of a rehydration solution called Hydrolite. Just so happens I was about to undergo a colonoscopy, a routine medical procedure, and I was going to get dehydrated if I didn't be careful. And I thought, well, this stuff will be perfect. It's exactly what I need. I was absolutely impressed. The results were precisely what I was looking for. And not only did that rehydration solution get me through the procedure without becoming dehydrated, they have another product, these fizzy tablets that give you the same rehydration solution just in a little portable tablet. You just obviously add it to water. And that was something I always wanted to invent. I did not understand why we did not have an oral solution that you could hold in your pocket in the form of a tablet that would help us, say you had some vomiting or some other GI distress. It seemed perfectly sensible to me that you could put a little fizzy tablet in and have the rehydrating solution right there in your hand. And they created this. That's what I'm excited about. Hydrolite, and we're welcoming them to the family. It's rapid, effective recovery from dehydration. It requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. So if you're sick, you've been vomiting, or maybe heavy perspiration, even from exercise, water does not cut it. You need what's called fluid. Sports drinks are far less effective and are not balanced for the rehydration, for maintaining your body volume. Simply, Hydrolite's formulation is based on established science. It is the best rehydration product I've seen or tried. They dominate in other countries, and they're no doubt going to dominate here. You won't need IVs if you're tolerating orals. You can use Hydrolite. Comes in flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, available, as I said, in that pre-mixed drink or a powder or the effervescence tablets that I was mentioning before. Simply drop it into a glass or a bottle of water and boom. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolite delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. That's what you need. You need volume quickly. Hydrolite solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydrolite at Rite Aid or online at Amazon. And for more information, visit Hydrolite.com. That is H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolite.com. We're back, and you were saying that you really targeted social media.
That, and for people now that could end up being somebody that really has something to offer the world, if they have to stop focusing on getting famous. They have to stop thinking about trying to get followers, which is naturally to look at what's working and give more of that. Instead of actually developing the skill set that you were talking about, that Aristotle, I mean, how long ago was that?
Yeah.
You know, thousands of years ago, already putting his finger on, if you really want to be a help to somebody, get good at something.
Yeah.
And what I'm always telling people, the surest path to success is to become capable of doing something extraordinary.
But there's a missing piece here, and you're sort of tilting at it when you're talking about the social media component, which is that a lot of these people that Bob and I were just describing had done something extraordinary, but they miss the piece of being able to make a difference for people. Like there is something about giving to another human being. And in their mind, it's like they think, well, I'll go serve soup at a soup kitchen, or I'll donate my money. That's good, but that's not the same as having a skill
mentoring
that changes the direction of somebody's life.
Yeah,
and that's what they're kind of looking for. That's what
mentoring and modeling.
But they won't go back and do the training for that.
But the reason why I compare the music environment to the Silicon Valley environment is very competitive. There's not a lot of friendships, like pretty cutthroat, right? So you're not really sharing it's a very competitive area,
right?
Music was very competitive. It was about songs and sales, right? So there wasn't a lot of ability to work with other people. There's just like, I got my thing, I got to get Nap, I got to do it, I got to make it, and 1 in 100 hits, and then
they get on teams together, and the teams have a certain would flow together, just the way you would performing in a band, right?
Yeah, but I'm talking about with peers on a larger scale.
We're talking about a band, Stephen.
you know something about that.
You got to be in a band and get a great band, you have to play with everybody you can until you find the right people that you can work with perfectly.
We were just saying
there were so many people before, you know, the GNR thing happened. So, I mean, I'd be in one band one day, the next day I'd be in another, next week I'd be in another. In fact, it was probably one of the most fun experiences I've had in my life was being able to live at different people's, you know, studios and jam with all these different people.
So, Stephen, you were going to tell us about your new idea, this 180 plan.
Does work okay. Well, if I'm mistaken or you disagree in any at any time, please step in and say, okay, rehabs are the biggest waste of time and the biggest failure, unless you are the owner of the rehab. Sit here, you're doing great. Okay, for starters, you go. I want to open not a rehab, but a 180 retreat. Where you go there, and the first thing you do, because the most dangerous thing is an addict detoxing and being awake thinking. That is the most dangerous thing. In rehabs, they will not knock you out.
They don't anymore.
Depending
He's correct
how,
on that.
How
He's
serious
correct.
Of addiction you have, I mean, when this is for everything.
Wait a minute, Stephen. I want to stop you right there. Remember how we used to get knocked out unconscious at Exodus Rehab in Marina del Rey?
No, I don't remember that. Those bastards.
There was,
but I do have a couple of good stories.
I'll tell you why they don't knock
it.
You out anymore. I'll tell you why they don't knock you out anymore. Because they're not in hospitals where there's medical professionals to monitor you. Right,
okay,
Drew?
And I have never met maybe the only nurses or rehab people that I've ever met that are really serious and dedicated and don't just go to the job just so they can get a paycheck, you know, put their 8 hours in and get the hell out and get paid, were the people that you had on your show. Lori.
Luisa. Shelly. Shelly, Luisa, Sasha, Luisa, Shelly.
Shelly.
Real deal.
And what was the guy's name? Dan?
Which
one?
You know, the big guy.
Will.
Will.
Will. Oh, my God. See, those are people who didn't just wake up and go, oh, crap, I got to go to work.
No, they had a call.
My 8 hours are over. Good, yeah. I get to go home. Then they end up having a beer.
Well, you know why that's so rare? It's because, I've told people this a million times, rehab is a terrible business done properly. And the only way you can do it properly is you have to staff with people for whom it's a calling, aren't trying to make a living, because you're not going to. And that's it. That's the only way you can do it properly. Otherwise,
it's
a terrible business.
But the thing is, the reason, and I did a study of over 100 people around the world when I would go on tour, and this was before I got off the alcohol, because I've been off the hard drugs since, 2009 when we did the, when you got me arrested? Well, you didn't get me arrested, but when that girl got me arrested, that's when I stopped. I did it one time, like a year after, but that was it.
Good.
And the alcohol was the hard part. But the thing is, you got to go in and be knocked out, and you have to clean your body out, and you're sleeping, but not where you're knocked out, where you're just gone. You have to be able to dream at least, but you have to be fed the right medication, the right nutrients, the water. Every addict and alcoholic is majorly dehydrated, so it would be a process of them just sleeping and getting all this shit out of their system. And then once they've come to, we wake them up, then we give them medication, but not the strong medication, because they're not going to need it for their body, because their body's going to be fine, because all this shit, all the nicotine, the alcohol, drugs will be out. But it's the mind.
Would you think, Stephen, if all detox units had you detox from nicotine at the same time?
I know, but it doesn't work. What do they tell you? And Bob, if I'm mistaken, you say so. Don't worry about quit smoking. One thing at a time.
Yeah, well, that's a standard motto. But
okay,
now they don't give a shit.
They want you to fucking smoke. We have to see. That's my problem. Is I still smoke, and I'm working on it. You need to be out. So everything is clean on your.
So okay. So after
stress,
the detox, where do they go?
So I think we.
It would be a retreat where you go everything you lived your life on the outside before you came into the program, to the retreat, we start doing the opposite.
Okay.
Because everything you were doing obviously wasn't working. So now we have to train the person like a baby learns to train himself to walk. First he gets up and then he falls down. But what does he do? He picks himself back up. He takes one little step, he falls, he picks himself up. Okay, so that's how we have to do the start.
So the 180 idea is contrary action.
Right.
That's why it's a 180 retreat.
Okay.
It's
so I also like the idea. I also like the idea of mixing in other people that want a major change of behavior or motivation or looking. Well, we'll have to sit down and talk.
People have been doing that. No, people have been doing that in Montana, there's a place, right?
Putting in
that
regular
has
people.
Addicts and regular people seeking truth.
Seeking change.
The addicts suck all the energy out because they're such, the normal people are like, I don't know about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
Addicts are a particular breed, if you haven't noticed. How many addicts do you know?
Dude, the 12 agreements. When you go into rehab, they give you these 12 steps, these 12 agreements. 12? I don't even want to hear the number 12 when I'm detoxing, okay? I don't even want to hear anybody talking to me. I want to be sleeping.
He's making
and resting and healing.
He's making.
I can't be up thinking, okay. And that's all I thought.
Stephen, Bob and I are going to get on the phone with you and really, you know, sort of walk through this a little more in detail when we're not on a podcast. But we appreciate hearing your voice, man.
180.
And we will get back with you. Thank you for everything. Thank you for the four agreements. I loved reading it, and I love
glad. Thank
your mom.
You.
Your mom
I
was.
You know, we could help some people.
Your mom was
that's
incredible.
That's the idea, not to make a paycheck. But to help people.
Yeah. Well, this is what we were just talking about. This is where people find meaning. This is why the later stages of recovery, people have to do that in order to stay in recovery. All right, Stephen, see you later, buddy.
All right, one last thing. Also with rehabs, if you go in there.
He doesn't like rehab.
And a half hour later you decide to leave, you do not get your money back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
They are ripoffs.
A lot of them are. He's right. A lot of them are.
I love you guys. Have a great weekend.
I'll see you, man. All right, buddy. Take care.
So he's not the first person that's felt like that. They all come to me. And the idea is some people, he's probably spent $800,000 on rehab.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I've had clients who spent over $1 million on rehab.
And they look back and they go, I wasn't going to do anything until I was ready. So why do people waste all that time and money? And now I'm ready. And now I go do it. Mm. So one of the interesting things that I study is how to get somebody ready. How do you get to that point where they have a moment of change? And that's a mystical thing in a certain way. I happen to believe, again, it's about other people influencing you so you can start to see yourself as you really are. But it's a more complicated
story. I have an idea why it got worse over a 20, 30-year period of time. It's because the society became more codependent. Mm. So you had people going to treatment repeatedly. I went 24 times.
Wow.
There wasn't but like 3 or 4 times thought I needed
to go. Wow. Well, right now it takes an average of 5 treatments to get 1 year of sobriety. That's average.
Really?
That's statistically.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think is fundamentally broken then about the system if it takes that many times?
It's a hard habit to break.
We can't make people want to change.
So then is it this is going to sound terrible, but so I like to play the game, no BS, what would it take? Yeah. So no BS, what would it take for somebody to go into rehab once and be done? Does that mean we filter them
when
out?
When they go when
so that
they're
they
ready.
Yeah,
they
right?
do.
So they
a don't third of people, watch this, a third of the people that go to treatment only go one time and they get it right away.
Is anybody able to predict?
That's what it used to
be. That's 1% now.
If I let you spend an hour with them, would you be able to predict who's going to succeed?
No.
Totally blind.
That's the one thing I'm always amazed at. That, and you know, people I used to kick out of treatment, you know, for complete non-compliance, they would come up to me, you know, 3 years later and go, you know, I wasn't ready to hear what you were saying, but you kicking me out got through to me. Still wasn't ready, but I've started thinking about that, and it led to their recovery.
But SAMHSA had the third idea. The first third was people in their late 40s, mature, responsible, what the Minnesota model is designed for. They would get one treatment and somehow
let me answer Tom's question. No BS, what would it take? Lock them in a room for a year.
Okay.
And have regular visits with some empathic, attuned individual and slowly let them out. Like what Steve was just saying. Let them, like a baby, learn how to navigate in the world again slowly. But their brain changes so much in that year that if you could just incarcerate them for a year, it would make a huge difference.
But they would have such resentment towards the incarceration, I don't think it would work.
That's an important point, because it didn't come from within the ability. Plenty of people stay in actual prison and don't use, some do, and get out and use first thing when they get out.
All right,
so
ready
it's not
for
exclusively
this?
That. Yeah.
So when we were first talking about founding Quest, I was asking the question. My sister was clinically depressed. What would it take to make her happy? No BS. That was the actual question.
Wow.
And so I'm sitting there thinking, okay, she's morbidly obese.
By the way, not depressed is not necessarily happy.
Yeah,
it's another thing too.
Interesting.
Less miserable is not necessarily happy.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead.
And wanted to get all the way to happy. Yeah. Right. So. Started looking at it, knowing that she's got a negative self-body image, and that's reinforcing the emotional distress. And then she eats to soothe it, which does work, because like any good drug, it delivers the momentary hit. And so that made her get heavier, which just reinforced the cycle. So she's in this negative cycle. So how do we reverse that? How do we get her going in the opposite direction? And the answer was, I'm going to kidnap her. I'm going to disguise myself because I don't want her to resent me. I'm going to take her out to international waters because I don't want to go to jail for, you know, imprisoning her against her will. And for a year, we're going to feed her chicken breast and broccoli. At the end of that year, I promise you, she's lean. Like, it's just a fact of biology. Yeah. Like, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
So she could think fat thoughts all day long, and she is still going to get lean. And then let her back out. And then we thought, well, that would be a total failure because she'd be so angry that this had been done against her will that without some mental component, that the transformation just wouldn't be complete.
We're saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. So I bring all this up because our answer ended up being, and this gets weird when you start talking about drugs, but our answer ended up being make food that she could choose based on taste so I could leverage behavior instead of trying to change it that happened to be good for her. So maybe it's finding meaning, right? That you can help people find meaning so that they get that chemical rush. Because part of what you were saying with Silicon Valley, the big problem is when you make all that money, like as somebody who went from literally scrounging my couch cushions to find enough change to put gas in my car to being a multimillionaire many times over, you realize that money doesn't change how you feel about yourself. It can't even touch it. So it's like it empowers you to do stuff and it is really cool. And don't get me wrong, money is powerful. It's as powerful as you think, but it's totally different. So people that are listening to this, if they haven't had that kind of success, people will always chase money because they can see that money is real. Money is real, right? It'll pay your rent. It'll get you food. Like, it'll get a lot of things for you. And people know that. They know that it has power. But what they think is that it's going to make them feel about themselves the way they feel about people that they see that are wealthy, and it won't. Mm. And because that doesn't happen, and then they get the money and they've sold the company and now they don't have employees staring at them, telling them how amazing they are. They don't have the world giving them feedback.
Wow,
about,
that's a component, right? I forgot. There you go.
Yeah. So, and I mean, even think about that, right? The first words out of your mouth about me were the protein bar, but I don't identify as a protein bar, right? Like, that's not me. That's just a product. Mm-hmm. So once you don't have that anymore, there becomes this huge vacuum in your life. And so if you don't have, and so I think people are motivated by five things. Money is one of them, but it's usually super low on the list. Autonomy is another. A desire for mastery.
What's autonomy? Gain, like freedom?
Not wanting to be a puppet, right?
Freedom. So freedom is it?
Yeah, freedom might be a little
cubicle,
far.
Not wanting to work in a cubicle.
Yeah, like you want to be self-directed.
Huh? Okay, yeah.
You want to direct your own life.
Got it.
Then you've got mastery, so you want to get good at things, mm-hmm. right? And anybody, I think that's just innate in humans. You want to explore an environment and then gain dominion over it, right? So gaining mastery, getting good.
I'm not sure a lot of people in this country really understand how important that is because they never experience it.
Yeah.
And once you experience it, you're like, oh, this is...
Here's another interesting thing.
So like,
I always tell my kids,
I keep telling them, be an expert in something.
Yeah.
Because once you do that, you'll understand what that is and feels like.
100%.
And that changes a lot of other how you approach a lot
of
other
stuff.
But
the other thing that's going on is this. It used to be in America, you had one job, you worked 35 years, you got a gold watch. And everybody's so anxious now that we don't have that system anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no security. At 40 years old, you're still looking for a new career. Why don't we see it as opportunity to experience
I think millennials do. I think they sort of...
Well, I know my peers do not.
It's one of their big strengths. I think millennials see
my
that
peers
as...
do not. And so when they get early retirement at 51 or something, they think they're, you know, oh my God. Rather than see like I did at 39, I think, God, now what am I going to do? You know what I mean? How do you get people to believe in, God, now what do I get to do?
Well, there's some really fascinating studies which remind me Broadway, code word Broadway, so that I don't forget. But the remaining two things that I think really drive people are purpose and significance. You've already talked about significance, so we don't have to dwell on it.
What about learning? Where does learn? I like
mastery.
Learning shit.
Gaining mastery. Okay. Really, really goes to that. So to Stephen's point, to your point about, being unnerved by all the movement. And Stephen was saying, actually, the best part of my life was when I was going from band to band to band. He was talking specifically about connecting with new people. But if you think about it, is if he were moving really from genre to genre to genre and really gaining this really broad understanding of music and all along the way collecting musicians, then you get into a really cool thing. Now, they did a study on Broadway and they said, what group of talent makes the best Broadway show? And what they found was you had to have a mix of people who had worked together before and people that they had never worked with. Because if you get only people that have worked together, they stagnate. They don't have any new ideas. There's nobody challenging them.
The Los Angeles Clippers. Go ahead.
They lose last night?
I went last night.
But if you have too many new people, there's no chemistry. And so you don't... Yeah, yeah, you don't get the shorthand, the trust and things that you get with people that have worked together. So millennials, I think, to Dr. Drew, to your point, millennials have grown up in that environment where they understand that the fastest way to get a pay raise is to move to a new company. And so as an employer, like, that's really freaky, right? Because you want the continuity. You want people there for a long time, but you can't afford to give people $20,000, $30,000 bumps every 18 months.
Yeah.
So you know that that becomes an inherent part. So companies, like, one of the things we did at Quest was bake that into the culture. So one of the parts of our 25-bullet point belief system was be here for the exact number of days that it's the most selfish thing that you could do. So, and then we would have check-ins like, what do you want? Where are you trying to go? How can we help you get there? Because I'd rather have you for my 12 or 18 months and you be totally in, totally like committed to this this company, dedicating yourself, because it's selfish, right? That you know the more that you're either gaining mastery or flexing your muscle, learning to get great at something, you're doing it within our ecosystem and helping us get better. And I know. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I know that you're building that skill set because you'll become more marketable to somebody else. But once you get comfortable with that rotation and you're not asking employees to hide it, mm-hmm. it can become really powerful.
Autonomy, purpose, mastery.
You said, let's see, money was one that you missed, and then significance.
Significance. What's significance? What does that mean?
So people want to matter. They want to know that what they do actually has impact.
Millennials definitely want to matter.
I think we all do. And I think that, you know, so I'm not a millennial. And for me, significance is the reason that I won't end up chasing the drug path or anything. You know, leaving Quest, because I'm not there in a full-time role anymore. I'm a founder role now. When I founded my new company, I went from 1,400 employees, you know, a company that's valued over $1 billion, to 7 people and like 7,000 social followers. And that was it. Like, that was my life. And it so scaled back, but I had never been more alive from the perspective of significance, because I knew what I was trying to accomplish. I knew who I was trying to help.
The pot I was trying to think of was the School of Greatness.
Yeah,
that's
with Lewis Howes.
Lewis, yeah, but I'm not. I don't think I see what impact theory is yet. I think you need to keep talking. If I don't see it, the listeners aren't seeing it.
So definitely. Yeah. So impact theory is us trying to incubate companies and incubate content creators.
And who's us?
Us is there's 7 of us. So my wife and I co-founded it. I'm the CEO of the company. And what we're
like
doing,
Idea Lab kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of. We're trying to do it in a much more today way, yeah. Social, millennial driven, where right. We're going to use technology to identify ideas, entrepreneurs, and pieces of content that go viral within our own ecosystem, and then actually make that. So on the content side, our goal is to be bigger than Disney in 50 years. Obviously, we need a very long timeline, but that'll give people an understanding. And I mean Disney, what they're doing now. So Disney's a fascinating example, because you had...
They bought Maker, right?
Hang on.
They bought just about everybody.
I got to take a little break. You're going to tell me about Disney, but first, this break. You know, I'm always happy to talk to you about our friends at Bergamot. They're the makers of a variety of supplements that use the extract from the bergamot citrus fruit, those polyphenols. That fruit is in Italy. These supplements act as a natural statin that may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions, as well as symptoms of the metabolic syndrome, which includes high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar. As you know, I've been excited about the natural treatment since I first heard about it. I'm getting behind it. The science behind it is sound, and physicians throughout the world and cardiologists are actually using it. Now, the makers that brought you the formulation Bergamot NA, Bergamot Pro Plus, now bringing you Bergamot Sport. It provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but has additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with a very, very active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina and reduce recovery time and reduce muscle inflammation. Now, I've been taking Bergamot myself, and I suggest you talk to your physician to see if Bergamot Sport is right for you. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code Dr. Drew, D-R-D-R-E-W, at checkout. Again, that is D-R-D-R-E-W, all one word, at checkout, and you save 10% on your order of Bergamot. To order the Bergamot Sport for yourself, visit bergamot.com, Bergamot N-A, Bergamot, B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T.com, or click on the Bergamot banner on drdrew.com. We're back, and also, Stephen forgot to mention, I want to be sure to call out something he's performing at. He's performing there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the 5th annual Rock Against Multiple Sclerosis. We should go to this. It's in honor of Richard Pryor. I think I've told you what a Pryor fan I am. Yeah.
We all are.
I think he's a poet. I think his stuff will stand not just comedy, but as like Homeric sort of poetry. I really believe that. When you hear it now, it's grows. You know, anyway, Nancy Wilson of Heart, of course, is the headliner. Comedian Bill Burr, Craig Gass are the host. I mean, yeah. Burr is so funny.
Where is it at? I got the email.
And Allison Chains. We'll money goes to the Rock Against MS Foundation to help people. And, of course, I think people are aware that Pryor died of MS. Building resource centers across the nation for MS patients. A great place to get them holistic healing therapy and other treatment modalities.
But where is the concert at?
We'll post it on the website.
We'll post it on the website.
We should go, right?
Yeah, it's somewhere here.
I'll figure it out.
But let's get –
So wait – Disney.
Yeah, so Disney is doing something that I think is really incredible. They're buying up all the culturally relevant intellectual property. And the reason that's important to me, so they bought up Pixar, they bought up Marvel Studios, Star Wars. They're going after everything.
What do you think their philosophy is? What are they thinking?
Well, so their philosophy is very clear. Bob Iger and everybody at Disney understands that merchandising at the end of the day is really what the game is. And so they buy properties that can be merchandised and can be franchised.
But it feels like there's a philosophy lurking behind that even, I don't know, maybe they haven't articulated it, but somehow, to me, it's all Mickey Mouse. It's all these clear, sustainable brands that are sort of iconic.
Yeah, I was at my son's school yesterday, and he was in chess class, and I got there early, and I was looking at all the backpacks, all Star Wars, Pokemon, and Disney. And I thought, they own everything but Pokemon. They're going after Pokemon.
It's interesting. What? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything really beyond what
just merchandise. What could be merchandise?
Yeah, but now let's elevate that. Let's elevate merchandising into the one form that allows ideology to echo. So I read a book called The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell. It changed my life.
Oh, me too.
Like truly.
Me too.
So okay, I'll share a story with you then. I was 25, about to get married, read this book, and he talks about how the problem in society, and this is why I created Impact Theory, the problem in society is that people know that the myths aren't real. They know that Star Wars is a made-up story. They know The Matrix is a made-up story. And so they don't read the universal sort of human condition truths in them as being something you should take into your own life.
So I it's funny. I had a more primitive experience of Campbell. I thought he was just saying myths don't exist the way they used to.
No, he said that because people, they pressed him and said, well, what's a relevant myth today? And he said Star Wars. But the problem is that people know it's not real. And so he said, what happens to a world when people don't believe in the mythology? Not that there isn't any, but that they don't believe in it. And he said, the problem becomes that rituals are not imbued with anything anymore. So you go through these rituals. They don't have the kind of impact that they used to have because people aren't...
Rites of passages?
Exactly.
Because they're different.
Well, he calls it ritual, but rites of passage for sure is a huge part of that. Yeah. So, and one of the ones that he talks about is marriage, which is how it ended up changing my life very specifically. So he said, you know, when you get married now, sort of it's all watered down. People don't necessarily believe in the religious ceremony from being a literal thing. And so there's really no difference between who they were the day before and the day after they get married. And so I thought, okay, then I'm going to do so. I'm going to go through ritualistic scarification, something that's painful, to remind me that I'm a different person the day before I get married and the day after. So the one tattoo that I have is that. It's a tattoo I designed. That's my commitment to my wife. And I had it put onto my skin. And
I got to say, I felt different at the altar. I felt changed. In that moment, I had a
Susan's dancing.
I wish people could see your wife right now.
No, I did, and the same. And I have a vivid experience. I spoke a couple times at medical schools and doing their graduation speeches. And I remember one time this old timer came up to me and he goes, you know, he was giving out many different kinds of degrees that day, and he goes, you know, this is the one degree, MD, that really, after I hand it to them, they're different. Mm-hmm. They have different sets of privileges. They can touch people in different ways. They can write prescriptions. You know, they can do all these things that they could not do the second before I hand them that diploma. And it's interesting. We have very few things like that anymore. I guess priesthoods or something. I don't know, that really changed us. And it was, and it's an interesting thing. There's a big emotional piece to it, right? Did you feel it when you were doing it?
I did during my wedding day because I built up. Really look at it as a transition,
which is good. I mean, that's the point. Do we need to do more of that in our rituals?
I think so. And so that is impact theory, right? I want people. They're never going to believe in it again. They're never going to believe that Star Wars is real, right? And they shouldn't,
right?
But they should be able to take it seriously, and they should be able to believe in the mythology.
Force. They should be able to believe in the Force.
Well, exactly.
Let's just do a test. To me, the Force is love. What's the Force to you? What does it represent to you?
The ability to gain mastery of your own mind.
Okay, what does the force mean to you?
I have a more mystical sort of, I think love is a big part of it. God, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I love this stuff, right? Because I think I deal in the drug addict's journey, right? Mm. It's the hero's journey. It's the prodigal son. I try to tell them this for decades, and they just have a blank look on their face. I said, do you know how important it is? It's not just about you. It's about us. It's about existence itself. We're the prodigal son. We're the hero's journey. Now you're going to be able to help people like Stephen is. And it gives me chills because I do see things from what I learned from Joseph Campbell. And it's not respected. You're exactly right. It's devalued. The prodigal son. Everybody laughs at it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm just sitting here thinking the biggest barrier, and just look at Stephen as case one even, the biggest barrier to getting people to really develop is do the work. You know what I mean? They don't do the work unless it's self-motivating.
They're
reinforced for it. Unless
there's not a lot of mastery, for sure.
It's really hard. And I for some reason I'm having kind of a personal experience. When I read Joseph Campbell and watched his lectures and stuff, that just started my process. Mm. Then I started reading anthropology, and then I started reading philosophy, and then I started reading the relationship and psychology and attachment. Right. Blah, blah, blah. It took years. Yeah, years really to figure this shit out. And I'm not sure. And on the other hand, Stephen found it in a little book. You know, I'm a little confused.
I think he found you're confused about impact theory specifically?
No, I get what impact theory is. I'm confused by what the answer is.
Yeah,
We're all trying to do the same thing here, right?
And I think when you accept that the human mind is the most complicated thing in the universe, that's when it's like, okay, then I don't expect mastery to come easily. I don't expect the answers to be entirely clear. And when you also just begin to dig into the mind and the way that it processes data, and most of it's processed below the level of consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's like, well, how do you use this very thin layer of the neocortex, your conscious mind, to actually get a grasp on what's being processed beneath that that's driving your decision-making, giving you a false sense that you're in control, but they can actually predict and influence your behavior without you even knowing it.
Yeah, and that's all here. That's all in the... That's all in the intersubjective interpersonal space.
Right.
The collective piece is how you come to that, understand that, see that, shape that. It doesn't happen by itself.
Well, where we come from, you're taught that you are your feelings in this society. Mm. And what we teach is where those feelings are coming from, right? And that if you correct that, you won't have so many negative responses to the world around you or the need to sate them with drugs.
100%.
And that it's a fascinating area, but I really like the idea that we've given up our myths because we think they're fake. Mm. I think I'm Catholic, and there's a ritual of the host, you know, communion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a ritual communion.
Many,
we're going to have cookie dough.
Not many people see what it really means.
Mm, totally.
You know what I mean?
Good. They're really good.
Thank you.
I think I had the cookies and cream many times.
I always steal them when I'm at this friend of mine's office that has them.
I like your friend already.
Like four of them.
Did you do a lot of taste testing on that before you
We did an insane amount.
Because I'm telling you, that is reflected in the product. Because it's like,
you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Quest has a massive R&D department, and they are just amazing.
Stevia? Or what are you using to...
We use some natural sweeteners, and then we use some artificial sweeteners as well. So we use Stevia.
How do you say that word?
Well, Stevia is the what
we had a friend that started a cola company with Stevia.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, I can't stop eating. That's why
we got it for free for a long. Yeah. We got it for free for like 2 years, and he sold the company. We don't get it for free anymore.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
And it's expensive, that stuff.
Well,
remember?
One more.
All right. All right.
I'm sure there's a website and social media for Impact.
For Quest?
Well, no.
For all of the above, Impact. Yeah.
Where should they go?
You can go to impacttheory.com. I'm hyperactive socially, so you can follow me at Tom Bilyeu.
B-I-L-Y-E-U?
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you go to this thing up in Utah or wherever?
Before you talk about that. Oh, the think tank thing in Aspen?
Yeah.
Aspen?
No. You talking about Summit?
Yes.
I have not been, no.
I'm supposed to go there.
In Utah?
Yeah, I was supposed to go last year.
What is it?
I don't really know. I don't know how to manage
it. I've never been to it, so I don't know. Somebody asked me. I think it was Nicole that was asking me about it.
What is it? Get in the mic, Nicole. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that.
You've never been invited?
I've never been invited, but clients of mine have.
Please, Nicole.
This is Nicole Rodriguez, and I am very, very fortunate to be working with Tom as his publicist and also Nick Desai with Heal. So I'm very, very I'm very lucky that universe has attracted such great people for me to work with. So anyway, there have been clients of mine who have been invited to the summit, and it's what I picture is that all of these change makers, people who really, really want to impact the world or have had impact get together and talk about how they can do that more, do it together.
My fear is it'd be a whole political thing this year. Especially
if you're there. I'm going.
That's what I'm saying. but okay, so... I also remind people the Rock Against MS we have.
Yeah, Summit Series is coming to LA.
Oh, wow. Hold on.
On November.
Rock Against MS November. Is March 25th. It's at the Los Angeles Theater. It's 7 o'clock. We should be there. Okay. Tom, is there anything else we want to dig into before we wrap this thing up? It's really a pleasure to meet you. And man. It's exciting that we all,
What are you reading now? What are you focusing on now?
Yeah. I just read a book called Disrupt You by Jay Samet. I don't know if you guys read the book. Really incredible. And it's so important right now with change happening as rapidly as it does, especially in technology, for people to stay on top of it. I don't think genius needs to be a young man's game, which is, of course, the famous quote. I think if you reinvent yourself, one of you guys mentioned that earlier, if you force yourself to reinvent yourself, frequency, that you'll be able to take all the things you've learned, apply them to this new thing, bring a fresh perspective. I think you can continue to have that kind of impact and really bring breakthrough ideas, but you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. So he goes into that in the
book. That's the hope anyways, because we got 30 years left. Can't just
sit
around.
You're about God's ears. That's a long time. I'm not sure I got 30.
We got 30, Drew. Right. Come on.
I like your attitude a lot more. And hey, if you make it 30 years, I promise you, in that time, aging will start happening backwards. So some of the stuff that's happening.
Now
the doctor in the crowd's looking at me like I'm crazy.
I just did stem cells on Thursday.
Nice. Right? And my kind of guy.
I'm telling you, Drew, don't shake your head. No.
I
have no pain.
Bob, they're being administered for anti-inflammatory effect. In your mind, it had some magical, reproduced your body as a whole new person.
It's going to eventually.
I'm with you, Bob.
We got to wrap this thing up. Should do a biology one. We should come back and do it. Maybe when I come to do your thing.
Absolutely.
So we'll do your, where do you record it?
In Beverly Hills.
All right. Well, I'll come do it.
It'd be awesome.
All right, guys. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Everyone shines deep in the skies, living a life, one image at a time. All the time spent on your own. see.